You're listening to Non Sequitur, The Audacity of Reason, Season 1, Episode 8. Discussion, a conversation between Arun Ra and Kent Hovind on evolution. For more, visit our website at www.nonsecshow.com, that's nonseqshow.com, or follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
We have got it finally after a week, and last night with some confusion, we are happy to announce that we have Arun Ra and Kent Hovind both in person here tonight. This is going to be a historic night, I think. We're going to have a really good show, and I thank, first of all of you guys out there for joining us. We do episodes every Saturday at noon. You can visit www.nonsecshow.com, and that's nonseqshow.com. You can also check out the guests that we have coming up, just to kind of give you an example of the shows that we have coming up in the coming weeks. We have Nate Dern from funnierdie.com, who is going to be coming on to talk about his new book, Not Quite a Genius. We are also starting a new segment with Pamela Whistle, who is the membership director of American Atheists, and they get all kinds of hate mail and voicemails every week, so she's going to be coming on once a week to kind of go through those voicemails and emails, and it's really fun. I mean, it's going to be really funny. At this time, I'm going to hand it over to my co-host Steve McRae, who will introduce the two contenders that we have tonight, and we'll go from there. So enjoy the show, everyone.
Well, I don't think either one of these gentlemen kind of need any kind of introductions by now. I think anybody who is anybody knows who they are. However, for this discussion, I think that they both should spend at least a minute or two kind of introducing themselves, giving their position and why they're having this discussion, and then we'll kind of jump right into it and kind of have just a free-for-all organic conversation between the both of them. Ken, I want you, if you're possible, can you start, give about 1 or 2 minutes, explain who you are, your position, and then we'll have Arun do the same?
Certainly. Yes, sir. Thank you for having me here. I'm 65 years old. My name's Kent Hovind. I've been a Baptist, ordained Baptist preacher since 1974. I taught high school science and math in Christian schools for 15 years. I've been a full-time evangelist speaking on creation versus evolution for about 30 years now. I take the position that the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of humanity. And those are the nice things we say about it.
Okay. Is that all you want to say?
Well, yeah, we're building a Christian park in a campground, actually, in Lenox, Alabama, straight north of Pensacola, Dinosaur Adventure Land. It'll be a simple science experiments to teach biblical lessons, and you guys can come on down. We have a lot of fun. We have 10 lakes on the property. Someone gave us the property, and we're having all kinds of things. We hope to be open April 21st. My website is drdino.com, and the phone number, 855-BIG-DINO, extension 3, takes right straight to my cell phone. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Arun, why don't you go ahead and take a minute or two, kind of tell people who you are and your positions on all this.
My name is Arun Ra. I had it legally changed for my state Senate position, and because it's the name that that I wanted to appear when I both ran for office and, of course, also on my book. It's on all my publications for the last 10 years. And, you know, it's now on my driver's license, my credit cards, Wikipedia, all of that. So I am the Southwest Regional Director of American Atheists, and I'm the director of the Phylogeny Explorer Project. And we do, my wife and I, we do educational videos, and I have a channel of 160,000 some odd subscribers where we counter creationism.
Okay.
And my book available on Amazon is The Foundational Falsehoods of Creationism, and is very highly rated. And Mr. Hovind is mentioned in it numerous times.
Well, yeah. Thank you, sir.
All right, awesome. So what we kind of figured was, because it's not going to be a structured debate and there's so much that I think you gentlemen have to discuss, I'm just going to kind of throw it over to you guys. And Kyle and I kind of going to step back, let you guys have this a very free-flowing, organic conversation. Aaron, why don't you kind of start us off? Or I think that Kyle had mentioned before that maybe there's something that Kent wanted to mention. Or did you kind of bypass that, Kent?
Kent wants to go on about something first.
Okay, that's fine. If Kent, you want to go start on that? And I know you said it may take a while, but if Aaron's kind of cool with it, then you want to lead in with that and we can go from there?
Yeah. No, Aaron had done a YouTube, 4 or 5 days ago, and I already did a quick YouTube for our listeners, but technical problems. It's not posted yet. It's coming, though, so I don't need to do that. Let Aaron go first. I'd like to hear his position.
All right. Well, my position is that obviously counter yours completely. I mean, I would say that the reason that the Bible is absolutely wrong about absolutely everything is because it was obviously written by ignorant, bigoted, primitive, superstitious savages who clearly had no idea what they were talking about. And that's why there's nothing that can be verified accurate, but a whole lot that is laughably stupid about what the Bible describes about the world. In fact, the way everything the Bible says about the earth in relation to the rest of the cosmos, any indication about genetics or history, anything, is embarrassingly dumb. Yeah. And there is, of course, no truth to any of your claims about, you know, evolution being a religion, for example. This is just an attempt at projection where you're trying to cast your own faults onto those who will not share them. And it's an attempt at the fallacy of false equivalence, which is what I think you meant to talk about, I'm sure, because that deals with most of your arguments, that and equivocation.
Ken?
Well, okay. Well, before we get into a discussion too far on the topic of evolution, we need to define what we're talking about. And for many years, I think you've obviously seen many times my division of that word into 6 different categories.
Yes, those are inaccurate. So we're gonna go with the correct definition. I know that you've actually bragged many times that people have corrected your misdescription of that, and it's appropriate that they correct you on this. I don't know why you don't correct yourself when you keep repeating an error. So when we talk about evolution, unless otherwise specified, because there is a colloquial meaning that doesn't apply to biological evolution or the science of evolution or certainly the theory of evolution, which pertains only to the aspect or theory of biodiversity, which can be summarily defined as genetic variance in reproductive populations over time or a change in allele frequencies in reproductive populations over time.
Okay,
and so I can get a longer definition, but still it's going to be within the confines of biology.
Okay, so you're saying the word evolution only encompasses the living things that have already come alive somehow. So you're leaving out any kind of organic evolution or what
there's
I would
no such thing as organic evolution. If we're talking about abiogenesis, that's a overlapping series of different processes. None of them are the evolutionary process, which is descent with inherent genetic modification.
Okay, so is this descent with genetic modification limited in any way, or do you think elephants and pine trees are related?
Well, definitely I think that elephants and pine trees are related, and that is a demonstrable fact, yes.
And how would you demonstrate the fact that elephants and pine trees are related?
One of the way, well, the primary way is phylogeny, which is kind of what I'm all about. It's my hobby that has become, thankfully, my job, directing the Phylogeny Explorer Project, which is an attempt to depict the entire phylogenetic tree of life as a navigable online encyclopedia of the entire cladistic system.
Okay. So just for the audience's sake, you are then our... what I would say, skipping the first 5 definitions of what I call evolution, the cosmic.
But only you and people do not know science, call evolution.
Okay. I think every textbook from every public school teaches all these as part of the general overarching principle.
Except that none of them, no textbook anywhere ever described what you describe as evolution. Unless you want to get into A. Becker or some of the other Christian deliberate misrepresentations to try to deceive students. But if you're talking about actual scientific documents, nobody agrees with the way you misrepresent this. So we're going to keep evolution as descent with inherent genetic modification.
So descent with inherent genetic modification. So they already have the ability to reproduce. They already are alive. They're already able to move, replicate, and ingest, digest food. You've already bypassed the major hurdles that are going to be a great obstacle to your religion.
I don't have a religion.
You certainly do.
We absolutely, certainly do not. And we're about to prove that. Kent, okay. I want to hear your infantile definition of what a religion is. And let's see how you've explored that.
You can look it up in any dictionary. Look it up in Wikipedia.
Well, I have actually looked it up in a lot of different dictionaries. When I took a course on comparative or the history of comparative world religions, our professor there challenged us, saying that that religion was something that he thought was impossible to define. I didn't think it was impossible to find because I do classification and I understand the rules for how to classify things. And as a matter of fact, I made this a little easier. I posted a collection of definitions that are relevant to this subject some years ago, back in 2012. I put something called Offerings to the Atheist Dictionary, because these are words that are comically, or actually comically is correct, that are comically misrepresented whenever you're arguing with creationists. The definition of religion that I came up with by examining all the different things that are universally accepted as religion by both their adherents and their critics are a doctrine of ritual traditions, ceremonies, mythology, and associated dogma of a faith-based belief system which posits a posthumous promise that some element of self, be it a soul or consciousness or memories, etc., may in some sense continue beyond the death of a physical being. Now, this applies to every religion that is universally accepted as a religion and doesn't, and evolution, however, meets exactly none of these criteria. So I want to hear what you define as a religion and how we can distinguish things that are not religion from things that are.
Okay, I would like to ask Kyle or one of the moderators to kind of keep time here because Aaron keeps over-talking me and monopolizing the conversation. This is supposed to be a discussion. I would like equal time.
He's asked you a question. We're going to give you ample time to respond to his question with a direct answer for a direct question.
I have up on screen the definition from Random House Webster's College Dictionary, year 2000, page 1116. Religion, a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. That is what fits your religion of evolutionism.
Except that
to
it
the
doesn't.
T. It does. It's exactly
it doesn't, because evolution has nothing to do with the cause of the universe, nor certainly not the purpose of it.
Does it have to do with the nature of the universe, how things work?
How things work, yes.
Okay, well, then you
but
have a
not
religion.
Not with the universe.
Okay. You believe that whales, I think it was elephants and pine trees are related. No one's ever seen an elephant produce anything but an elephant.
They are both eukaryotes, are they not?
It doesn't matter. They're both living.
Why does it not matter?
They're both above ground. They both
ingest
gases.
But they're both eukaryotes, correct?
It doesn't matter. You're missing
the point. It certainly does matter. But if the question is not whether it matters, the question is whether or not they are eukaryotes.
You're missing the point completely.
No, you are missing the point. Are they both eukaryotes, yes or no?
As far as I know, they are.
Have you ever seen a eukaryote give birth to a non-eukaryote?
Does that prove they're related?
within the phylogeny, yes, it does.
Okay, now, since you keep talking about phylogeny and said this is your area of expertise, I would like to just ask you, you're on a show called The Non Sequitur, which I think is classic. A non sequitur is a conclusion or statement that does not logically follow from the previous argument or statement. Okay. I think we can give examples of elephants producing elephants and pine trees producing pine trees. It does not logically follow that they are related.
Why would that not logically follow? I need to explain something to you that you've been repeating incorrectly for years. I've been listening to you get this wrong for 20 years, and I'm delighted that maybe I'm the first person out of all the people you talk to. It can't be that I'm the first person to address this, but I keep hearing you repeat this error. So let me address that now.
It is not an error. You are in error. You are in error, and I'm here to fix it.
You have no idea what I'm even going to say. And when I'm done saying it, you still won't have any idea what I said.
Aaron, you have no idea what you're saying. I will help you here. Religion is a belief.
Don't pretend. I know that you made a life out of pretending, but that's not what we're going to do.
I'm
addressing your error. Just be very clear.
Hold it. You are the one pretending. You are pretending that a pine tree and an elephant are related. Come on, that's a pretend. Okay.
I don't need to pretend that. I'm trying to demonstrate something to you. I'm trying to explain something to you, and you're trying to talk over me to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, go back and listen to the tape. Who's talking over who here?
Okay, let's hold on a second.
I'm trying to explain something.
Let's keep this to where everybody can follow. Okay.
Okay.
Kent, we're going to let you. I'm going to let you go and explain your thought process as to why Aaron is in error with that. statement. So, Aaron, please let him.
Let's make sure we get the names right. It's Aaron. Aaron Raw is actually his name, not Aaron, not Eric, not whatever. It's Aaron.
Let's keep it on track so everybody that's listening can kind of follow, because you can't understand what either you're saying when you're jumping over each other. So just let Kent finish out his thought, Aaron, and then we'll shoot over to you and you can counter, okay?
A week ago, I asked you to ask Aaron what is the best evidence for evolution. He responded by saying it is systematic phylogenetics. And he said in his little 3-minute YouTube clip, the only way Hovind can counter that is to meet the phylogeny challenge, which no creationist will ever even attempt to do. Okay, first place, I'll help correct you a little bit here, Aaron. It is phylogenetic systematics, not systematic phylogenetics, but that's okay. According to evolution.berkeley.edu, all life on Earth is united by evolutionary history. We are all evolutionary cousins, twigs on the tree of life. Phylogenetic systematics is the formal name for the field within biology that reconstructs evolutionary history and studies the patterns of relationships among organisms. Unfortunately, history is not something we can see. That is correct. Phylogenetic, from the dictionary, just Googled it on Google here, relating to the evolutionary development and diversification of a species or group of organisms, or of a particular feature of an organism, for instance, the teeth or the bone structure, etc. And I'm holding in front of me, I'll show it from Encyclopedia Britannica 2005, a phylogenetic tree based on the nucleotide differences in the gene for cytochrome C. And they have all these creatures with lines drawn between them, showing that a human, a monkey, a dog, a horse, a pig, etc., and a moth, and a screwworm, and a tuna are all related to a common ancestor. They draw these lines on the paper, and that becomes their science. Now, I'm curious, why did they choose to use the phylogenetic tree based on cytochrome C? Why did you make a tree based on the number of chromosomes, or based on the adult body weight, or based on life expectancy, or based on life or gestation period, or based on average number of offspring, or based on
because
the number of teeth?
They have to focus on derived synapomorphies.
All of these things are features, and if you do a phylogenetic tree on any of these things, you get a wildly different tree. For example, penicillin has 2 chromosomes. Houseflies and tomatoes both have 12. If you did a phylogenetic tree, you would say houseflies and tomatoes are identical twins. Possum, redwood tree, and kidney beans all have 22 chromosomes. They are not identical triplets. Humans have 46 chromosomes, and chimpanzees and tobacco both have 48. So if you did a phylogenetic tree based on anything other than what you want to believe, that there's somehow a relationship, you would get wildly different answers. So I think the evidence shows very clearly that you're choosing and selecting a particular phylogenetic tree that anybody can make up. You can arrange things in any kind of order you want and draw lines between them, but all the phylogenetic trees are nothing but lines on paper that somebody decided to make a relationship. Like you think a pine tree and an elephant are related. That's a line on a piece of paper, Arne. That's not science. Science is something we observe, we study, we test, we demonstrate. Everybody that's ever done it will tell you elephants make baby elephants, no exceptions. Now, if you choose to believe, and I emphasize the word believe because it is a religious belief that you have, that elephants and pine trees are related, that's fine. I don't care what you believe. But I resent paying for that to be taught to all the kids in the school system. That is not science. That's a religion in every sense of the word. Go ahead.
In no sense of the word is that a religion, because it is not faith-based. It's evidence-based. And it has nothing to do with any purpose for anything, much less anything to do with the beginning of the universe or what came prior to it. Nor does it require a belief. I would suggest that we both start from not believing anything and just review the possibilities. And one of the things we have to look at is the law of monophyly, which is an evolutionary law. This is the one that Ernst Mayr described as Darwin's second law of common ancestry. And this is where he says that multiplication of species is Darwin's third law. And this is the one that I refer to as biodiversity. In either case, it means that one species may diversify into 2, into 4, and 8, and several. But that in every daughter lineage, evolution is just a matter of superficial changes being compiled against successive tiers of fundamental similarities. And it is those tiers of fundamental similarities which can be interpreted as derived synapomorphies, which is what they're basing the phylogeny on. I have heard creationists argue that a watermelon is 98% water and a cloud is 100% water, and so a watermelon only missed being a cloud by 2%. Or that we could classify an octopus as being an ink pen since it spits ink, and we can classify it as a spider because it has 8 legs. And these are all deliberate attempts to avoid the fact.
Again?
avoid the fact of what? That an octopus is related to an ink pen? What?
You understand the law of monophyly, but as I just described, it means that you can't outgrow your ancestry. That means at no point in evolutionary history did one kind, which doesn't exist, ever become another kind, which doesn't exist either.
You just told me that elephants and pine trees are related. You do believe
they're still eukaryotes,
kinds.
Aren't they?
So that is that. That's
so
all.
They're
it
still
takes.
Eukaryotes, aren't they?
So that proves they're related.
Are they still eukaryotes or no?
Yes. Does that prove
okay,
they're
good.
Related?
Okay, good. They never became a different kind, ever. Did
so
they?
Your definition of kind would include a pine tree and an elephant as the same kind of creature.
Are they both eukaryotes or no?
Are you drunk?
Are they both eukaryotes?
Yes.
Okay. Then they are both the same kind in that respect, right?
By your this nobody's definition of kind. Ask
are
a 5-year
sure?
old.
Look,
ask
what
a 5-year old.
Look at the Bible, for example. What the Bible says about kinds? How
the
many
Bible
different?
They,
yeah, the Bible mentions the beast kind.
Ten times in Genesis.
We're talking about the beast kind. Can you identify what is and isn't in the beast kind?
Well, let me say what you asked. What the Bible says? The Bible in the very first chapter, Genesis chapter 1, 10 times says they will bring forth after their kind. So the kind has to do with bringing forth, and I can help you here. I taught biology. Elephants and pine trees cannot bring forth
because
whether
of the evolutionary law of monophyly. We have become a different kind. You can speciate. You can come. You can get to a point where you have speciation, where they no longer can interbreed with the parent stock, or maybe with their sister species. But they didn't become a different kind. They are still the parent category that they belonged to. And this applies to everything in the human phylogeny. We still belong to every one of our ancestral clades.
Ken, explain to everybody what you mean by kind so that we're all on the same page. Aaron just explained what he meant, so you kind of go through what...
And Ken, can you explain in kinds in reference to what Aaron's saying in regards to monophyletic clade? When he's talking about Meyer's Law of Monophyly, can you kind of... join them together to explain your version of kind in relationship to something in a monophyletic clade.
Well, let's take this one question at a time. The Bible 10 times in Genesis chapter 1 mentions the word kind and 10 more times in the flood story, Genesis 6 and 7. So 20 times in the first 7 chapters, it talks about Noah bringing the animals in the 6 and 7, chapter 6 and 7, bringing the animals onto the ark after their kind. So it has to do with bringing forth and for them to get two of each kind on board the ark. I can assure you a pine tree and an elephant are not the same kind of animal in the biblical way of thinking or in anybody
are
else.
Are either one of them in the beast kind?
A pine tree is not in the beast kind, no.
But so an elephant is?
An elephant is a beast. It's a beast of the earth.
Okay,
yes,
how many different types of beasts are within the elephant or within the beast kind?
Well,
and how can we distinguish them?
Well, the current estimate is there are 7,000 or 8,000 kinds of animals on land.
How many of them are beasts?
To breathe air. That would
be how many of them belong to the beast kind?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Okay, so we have kinds within kinds?
Well,
there are different kinds of beasts? There's not just the beast kind. There's also kinds of beasts within the beast kind?
Well, that's a great question. But see, I'm not asking for my theory to be taught at taxpayer expense. You are. So the
well, yeah, and the
on
one
you.
I have is actually especially justified, and yours is not. You're arguing for kinds, which means did you catch when I said that the only way to address this would be to address the phylogeny challenge? Did you follow that? Do you even know what the phylogeny challenge is?
I do, but let's just take
okay, what is the phylogeny challenge?
Arne, hold on one second, Arne. Let him finish out an answer. Go ahead, Kent. We're going to give you the time to finish out your answer, and
you're bringing up 5 or 6 topics. Okay, I will stand by the Bible, which says very clearly the animals bring forth after their kind. Therefore, the ability to bring forth seems to be directly related into deciding what exactly is a kind. I think we could demonstrate. I may show up some pictures here. We're going to video this for people. There are 200 recognized species of squirrels in the world. They are the same kind of animal called a squirrel. That's from National Geographic.
Is there anything other than squirrels that are in that kind?
In the squirrel kind? I don't know.
Is there a squirrel? Okay, so there's a squirrel kind. So God created a primordial group of a pair, I guess, of squirrels? Is there a chipmunk kind as well?
Now, whether the chipmunk and squirrel are related would be a good study for biology. But
it would define what a kind is.
Sure.
So did God create two rodents that wait, there's a rodent kind. So now we have squirrels, we have chipmunks, and we have do we have rabbits in that? Are we going to put lagomorphs into that same kind as well?
And you're talking over me again. I don't interrupt you. Now listen, there are 200 recognized species, and I'll use the word species, of squirrels. I think they're probably all interfertile. There are 350 breeds of horses. You get into different names here, what they mean. What is a breed name? What is a species? What is a family, a genus, a kind? The biblical definition of kind was given, or the word kind was used way before Carolus Linnaeus was ever thought of. So Carolus Linnaeus came up with our current classification system. There are the horses, for instance, the horse, the zebra, can interbreed. The ass, the Shetland pony, you can get a zebra, a shebra, a zebrass, a zedonk, a zeonki, a zorse. They probably are the same kind. I don't know exactly where the line is, but I think it's pretty obvious in most cases that...
Well, clearly that not.
For heaven's sake, Aaron, you think a pine tree and an elephant are the same kind. What on earth is wrong?
But here? You think there are kinds within kinds, and that we have the squirrel kind and we have the chipmunk kind, both within the rodent kind. So it sounds like you're defining what clades are, which, of course, would all connect to each other because trees and elephants are both eukaryotes, as we said. So at what point do we get to where God created a primordial pair who then diversified into all these other clades?
Well, that, like I said, would be a great field of study.
That's the phylogeny challenge. Well, so you have to show me, and I made a video about this for anybody that's curious. Please look up the phylogeny challenge. It is the death knell for all creationist arguments because it can't be addressed.
So Aaron, you're asking in the phylogeny challenge for the original type of pair that created all the other supposed kinds and subclassifications.
Yeah, if there was any truth to creationism whatsoever, mm-hmm. or if the theory of evolution was fundamentally flawed in any way, then there would have to be a point where, as Kent does, he accepts a certain degree of phylogeny, but it has to trace back to an original set of created kinds. And it can't be, well, that would be an interesting question since they're both rodents, and both rodents are eutherians, and all eutherians are mammals, and you can trace it all the way back to eukaryotes.
Would that have
so
to
where is the dividing line?
With the phylogeny challenge, would it also have to show and demonstrate speciation rates to show this original mating pair to diversify to all these species that are out there relating to whatever the original kind that Kent is referring to?
Well, the speciation rate isn't really relevant unless you put a time constraint on it.
7,000 years.
Okay, if he's going to imply his own time constraint, then he has this issue that he would have to address as well, because that's just going to further complicate his position.
I will gladly address that if you stop interrupting and bringing up 20 more topics. Okay.
It's the same topic. It's been the same topic.
Okay. The Bible says they will bring forth after their kind. I will make the statement that probably Noah had two squirrels on the ark. They have diversified into 200 species of squirrels. Black ones, white ones, brown ones. That is not evident, and that could happen in 4,400 years. We have 339 breeds of dogs that have been developed in the last 300 years. Yes, it can happen very quickly. There are biological factors, like the Kaibab and the Abert squirrel, just by geographic isolation across the Grand Canyon, have developed and look pretty different. Whether they're still reproductively capable, I don't know. Put them together and find out. There are 800 breeds of cattle recognized worldwide. And they fall into two main types, according to Wikipedia, just a couple days ago, yesterday, okay? So 800 breeds of cattle, I think we would agree, are probably the same kind of animal. Noah might have had 10 cows on the ark, or 20, and we now have 800 breeds. I don't know what he had on the ark. I'm not asking for mine to be taught at taxpayer expense. But if you think a cow and a pine tree are related, and an elephant and a bacteria, I think that's a stretch of anybody's imagination. I have some pictures here of, for instance... the different cats in the cat family. Here's a jaglion, a cross between a jaguar and a lion. So possibly the jaguar and a lion are the same biblical kind. Here's a bobcat lynx cross. There are 30 recognized breeds of chickens in the world, and it says the jungle fowl is the original bird from which all varieties and strains of domesticated chickens are derived. Man has developed domesticated chickens. Some lay more eggs, some have more meat, some live longer, some produce more offspring. They can select for a certain characteristic that they want, but they're still a chicken. And a five-year-old knows that. They could recognize right away the difference between a chicken and a pine tree. Why you can't, I don't know. But
what do you mean I can't? I just read to you the law of monophyly, which shows that you can't, that there's always going to be a chicken. It's never going to not be a chicken. All its descendants, no matter how much they change, they're going to still be chickens. Why? Because of the law of monophyly. And those chickens are still going to be neonath birds. They're still going to be birds. Not the bird kind, because the Bible doesn't describe what a kind is. As a matter of fact, it says there's all sorts of birds, and it doesn't describe what a sort is either. But we have the idea that we have all kinds of birds. So we have kinds within kinds, which sounds like it's describing the same thing as clades, but the difference being, and this is the important thing that you keep missing, is that there has to be a point where they're not all related. So it says all kinds of birds, implying that there's different kinds of birds. So there were individual creations, yet they're all birds. So why are they not the bird kind?
Well,
can you give me those? Give me a distinction between kinds.
You mentioned the law of monophyly. What is the ancestor between the pine tree and the elephant? What did that ancestor look like, and why didn't it always bring forth after its kind? Why did it diversify? It did. You mean an elephant and a pine tree are still the same kind?
That's right. They're still eukaryotes.
Okay. Well, I can help you recognize. If you get confused ever any time, I can show you which is a tree and which is an elephant. I think probably.
I can do that too. See, you've described evolutionary principles for the last 5 minutes. I've no contest with that. I'm waiting for the creationist principles to come in.
I think I've told you several times. The Bible says if they can bring forth, they are the same kind.
Unless they've now speciated. Would you accept that? I've seen in some of your other videos, you accept that speciation happens so they can no longer bring forth.
Speciation happens, but it's within very strict limits. There are 200
what are the limits?
Well, there are 200 species of squirrels. Someday there may be 500 species of squirrels. That doesn't.
What are the limits?
I think the limit is called squirrel. They're always going to be what's called a squirrel.
Because of the law of monophyly, they're always going to be eukaryotes, too. They're always going to be mammals. They're always going to be eutherians. None of those things are going to change.
So are you
are still you still belong to every clade your evolutionary ancestors did. There was no point where you stopped being what they were. You can't grow out of your ancestry.
So I am still a pine tree.
Did I say or imply in any way that you were descended from a pine tree?
You said I'm still a eukaryote, and so are the pine trees.
Are
so
you telling me that you are not a eukaryote?
Are you a pine tree?
Did I tell you that all eukaryotes are pine trees?
Yeah, so are you a pine tree?
I told you. Can somebody back up the tape? When did I tell Kent Hovind that all eukaryotes are pine trees?
What he said for clarification, what he said was that all pine trees are eukaryotic. They're all eukaryotes, but not all eukaryotes are pine trees, correct?
I understand.
Okay.
But your answer.
So at no point in your evolutionary history did a eukaryote give birth to a non-eukaryote. So, and the same thing applies. Throughout. So all the hundreds of times that during the last 20 years, you kept saying a dog never produces a non-dog. I'm sorry. That's always been wrong. That's always been a straw man. That has never been a correct criticism of evolution. That has been a description of an evolutionary law, which you have failed to understand lo these decades.
No, I think I completely understand it. Dogs always
just
produce.
Demonstrated other.
Let him get it out.
I will say it again. You haven't understood it in 20 years, but dogs do always produce dogs. Do you know of an exception to that?
Because of the evolutionary law of monophyly, that is true. And dogs remain conoidian carnivores. They never became a non-carnivore when they produced the first dogs. Still a carnivore. Still a member of every one of its parental kids. Same thing with cats. Phylloidian carnivores are still carnivores. Dogs, cats, both carnivores.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Are pine trees carnivores?
Because carnivora is limited to a subset of mammals and trees are not even animals, no.
But you think elephants and pine trees and dogs are related?
Are still eukaryotes, yes.
So, but it was at some point they became carnivores. Something happened.
Yes, that's correct. And I've got a series of videos explaining the evolutionary stages of that, if anybody listening to this cares. It's called The Systematic Classification of Life, where I go through some of the major clades. We're up to episode 24, and we've just now gotten to mammals. So there's another dozen or so videos in that series at least to come.
That ought to be exciting. Okay. So pine trees and elephants and dogs are related. At some point, the ancestor of whatever those three, whatever that ancestor looked like, diversified, and obviously elephants and dogs and pine trees look different today and behave differently and are now in certainly different species. I would assume different families and, maybe
families.
Kingdoms. Well, they're different kingdoms, plant and animal kingdom, aren't they?
The families and kingdoms really don't matter. Those are Linnaean constructs, and they're not really applicable. The only thing that has a hard definition is, or the thing with the hardest definition is species. So everything else, all of these other taxonomic groupings, these grades that Linnaeus came up with, they serve only as signposts anymore, because he wasn't aware of how many increments there were between each of these different levels.
So Carolus Linnaeus was not aware that a pine tree was different than an elephant?
Let's try this. Obviously, yeah, you're trying to misrepresent this as much as you can, because I never said anything like that. However, you did mention the five-year-old could tell them apart. Now, what were the examples that you gave? A dog, an elephant, and a pine tree?
Do you think a five-year-old could tell the difference between those?
Yeah, I think a five-year-old doing the old Sesame Street game of one of these things is not like the other could probably pretty easily depict that the pine tree is the odd one out. Would you agree with that?
Very good. You're slowly getting it. There's hope. Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. I can't imagine that anybody, even in your following, could possibly think that you're the one that understands this and I'm not.
I think they all believe I understand it and you don't. But go ahead.
Okay. Using the same description, you can find other things that are closer and eliminate the dog from the elephant by finding things that are closer to those. Using that same simple principle, once you realize derived synapomorphies, which things matter, which things don't. You can't decide that a certain type of parrot isn't a parrot because it's green, for example. You can't make up arbitrary rules like that. If you want to categorize any collective, you have to find the traits that are already contained within every member universally accepted in that set before you can decide whether some new addition belongs there or not. Do you understand that?
Well, let's say we're going to accept the traits of an animal to be something.
Okay, so you didn't answer that question.
Well, you've asked me about 14 questions here, and
that,
left
that
unanswered.
One question. You didn't answer that one question.
Well, let's
you
go back to the original.
You've got another question instead of the answer.
Well,
all right. It doesn't matter. Go ahead. You change the subject however you want.
Go back and listen to this tape, Aaron. You changed the subject repeatedly.
I'm still on the same subject, and you're trying to derail. Go ahead.
How about we do this? Because a lot of crosstalk. Aaron, ask your question again very directly, very succinctly, and then we'll have Kent directly answer that single solitary question, not going back to anything that's been previously discussed up to date. Just what question did you just ask that you want him to have a direct answer to?
Well, I didn't get to answer the very first one yet about what is a species or what is a biblical kind. I'm trying
all
to
right,
answer
let's
that.
Start
right,
there because well, that is that the a, same that, that,
I think they're
that
all related.
Topic has not changed. Yeah. It's the same thing I've been talking about since the beginning. He thinks it's multiple subjects.
It's just
that he has no clue what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
so please, let's get back to the one and only subject we've been discussing so far. Identify kinds as distinguished from other kinds. Give me a couple of different species, for example, that we can identify as being different created kinds. Things that ideally scientists would consider closely related. Not as far apart as you can find them, but something that scientists would say, well, these are both in this group, and you say, no, these are both individual creations. Give me that example.
Okay, I have in front of me a picture that I got from the internet 2 days ago showing carnivora, which includes panthers, the skunk, the otter, the familiar dog, the Canis familiaris and Canis lupus, the wolf, and they have lines drawn connecting them all to a common ancestor. And I would like to point out that in the panther kind, there are, according to A to Z Animals.com, 7 different subspecies of leopard, which differ in their appearance. The African leopard is the most common. I would suspect those 7 different leopards had a common ancestor, and it was a cat. Okay.
Okay. So let me ask for clarification purposes. When I say kind, and you say kind, we are obviously talking about something different.
Correct.
Now, you are describing, though you aren't aware of it, you are describing a clade. And when I use the word kind as distinguished from clade, the only difference is that the kind begins with a special creation. So a kind will not be part of another larger kind. You follow me?
I don't think the cat kind is part of the pine tree kind.
The answer was a yes or no question about whether you follow this. Evidently, you do not. Do you understand that a kind is the beginning of a clade, the crown of a clade, from which there is no commonality? So that these two, if you wanted to start with squirrel, if you want to call it a kind, then God created two squirrels, and then he separately created chipmunks and everything that is squirrel-like within that division of rodents, and then the parent category of rodents.
Yeah, I've never studied to see if a chipmunk and a squirrel could have a common ancestor. What is their chromosome number? Is it possible they had a common ancestor?
That's maybe. What the phylogeny challenge is. It's to establish what a kind is, and a kind is not a clade. So if you're talking about parental groups from which that include all of their descendants, and that's what you're describing, then you're describing clades, not kinds. The difference between a clade and a kind is that the kind is a clade that begins with a special creation. So give me an example of two different kinds, two different special creations, where those clades began with those special creations, but which science would consider closely related or within a parental clade.
Would you agree that the seven different leopards of the world probably had a common ancestor and it was a leopard?
No.
You don't agree with that? Okay.
I agree that the leopards would have a common ancestor that was a leopard, and that all panthers also have a common ancestor with other cats, and that macrodonts also have a common ancestor with panthers and felines, because there's three different distinctions for cats, and that the nymphrids also are related to cats with a common ancestor, and that we get to further down, we also have vivarids included, and then we also have canoids, which are the dogs, the bears, the weasels, and seals. All of these are genetically linked. It's not just lines on paper, and if you think that phylogenetics is just drawing lines on paper, then yeah, we need to have a long talk, and this is it. So at what point could you show me two different created kinds that don't share a common ancestor?
Okay. I think the created kind, let's take the pine tree leopard example here, since we're on that. You believe they had a common ancestor. I do not. I think pine trees, I don't know how many varieties, I didn't look it up. How many pine trees are there? A lot. I mean, there's the loblolly, the longleaf, there's probably 1,000 varieties of pine trees. Now, whether they had a common ancestor or not is interesting. I don't know, but let's assume that they did. If we can get 1,000 varieties of pine trees from an original pine tree, that is not evidence that a pine tree and a leopard are related.
It is evidence, however, that all of these conifers had a common ancestor, is it not?
I agree. They probably did.
So can you find me, same question, repeating the same question again, which you clearly do, you have demonstrated you do not understand the question, so I'm phrasing it again.
Okay.
I want you to give me not just another description of a clade, which you mistakenly refer to as a kind. No, that's not what a kind is. That's a clade. A kind is where the clade begins with a special creation. Can you give me two special creations that science would consider to be in the same parent category?
Four different species of squirrels, or skunks, I mean, because this picture showed a skunk and a leopard as being related.
Yes, because skunks are mustelids, which are a subset of conoidea, and then your panthers, again, a subset of phylloidea, both within order Carnivora. So are you suggesting then that God created skunks but did not create any of the other weasels around it, that all other mustelids, or did he create a common ancestor of mustelids, and then we have to look at the common ancestor of mustelids along with the other related groups within conoidea? Is a skunk your created kind, or is mustelid your created kind? Which is it?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think that this textbook shows the otter also is in here next to the skunk as being related. There are 13 varieties of otters.
And they have I gave you a hint that you needed to look up the phylogeny challenge before you address this, and you don't even know what the phylogeny challenge is.
The phylogeny, as I've clearly demonstrated, is drawing lines on paper.
Challenge.
Yeah, let's try to clarify. He's not talking just about phylogeny. He's asking you, do you know what his phylogeny challenge is, which is something he has issued, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, dealing with the original kinds for what would be the beginning of a clade for the creationist point of view along those lines?
Yeah, I set it up so that most people who visit my channel would see the phylogeny challenge video first thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You want to know what the original created kinds were and how that is distinguished from the other created kinds and what prevents them from being connected. Is that
no? The second part of the question is irrelevant.
Okay.
Yeah. If you can show me created kinds, then it wouldn't matter how that clade diversifies after that, or the number of subset clades within that, because you can have new clades erupt within those old clades, and they're still going to belong to the parent clade that they always were. And the same goes through all, entire evolutionary phylogenies, every one of them. They remain belonging to every ancestral category there that their ancestors ever did. There was never became a non-dog. That argument is invalid. So show me two created kinds that science would consider within the same parental clade.
Well, if they never became something other than their parents...
Because of the law of monophyly that I just described.
It's an
evolutionary law.
So if there was something then that was the ancestor of pine trees and elephants where we started this conversation, obviously something happened. And what this is, nobody's ever observed this. See, science, I guess my definition of science is very different than yours. Science is things we observe, study, test, and demonstrate.
And that is exactly my definition as well.
Okay, then so far, every farmer
in the
world...
And we can observe, study, test, and demonstrate that the most primitive and simplest plants are, in fact, single-celled, and that they are eukaryotes.
And do you think
and if we just teach the facts, if we teach the observable, testable, verifiable facts about this, then we come up with what Linnaeus came up with when he discovered a tree of life that should not exist. He was a creationist. He had no idea, no concept of evolution. In his time, species were immutable. You couldn't derive a new species. And yet he was seeing a tree such as you're currently describing. You don't realize it's cladistics that you're talking about, but that's what it is. He didn't have a concept of that, and he couldn't explain it. That's why he turned to the scientific community and challenged them to explain, why is he seeing this?
So did Linnaeus think that pine trees and elephants were related?
No. He was a creationist, but he did think that apes and people were the same thing, indistinguishable. And he challenged the scientific community to find him a generic difference that accords to the laws of cladistics, or not cladistics, of taxonomy. And they couldn't. So they arbitrarily created a class of pongo just to ease their own conscience about it. But then, of course, in the last 20 years or so, genetics has confirmed that there is no such thing as a separate family for the non-human apes. We are still apes.
Okay, I think it was dictionary.com or whatever, the word definition of cladistics, since you're trying to equate that with kinds. A method of classification.
I'm not. I want to clarify. You are the one who is doing that. You're using the word kind to describe clades, and you are habitually avoiding the actual definition. A kind would be a clade that begins with a special creation. I distinguish these. You're the one equating them. Do not accuse me of making your mistake.
Well, let me just read you the dictionary definition of cladistics, okay, where clades come from. A method of classification of animals and plants according to the proportion of measurable characteristics that they have in common. It is assumed that the higher the proportion of characteristics the two organisms share, the more recently they diverged from a common ancestor. So cladistics
That would not be a scientific definition. I can help you with that. The scientific definition is a classification, as I previously described, with all of the criteria that each of these groups should have. You have to make a total tally of everything that is included within that group before you decide whether something else belongs there. But the key word, which is not in your layman's dictionary, is that the cladistics is a classification that includes all its descendants. It doesn't make special exceptions for certain ones. For example, the clade animal, which is formerly known as metazoa, is multicellular eukaryotes with an internal digestive tract. Well, this is the simplest definition. That's what an animal is. That applies to you, right?
I definitely have an internal digestive tract. Yes, sir, I do.
And you're a multicellular eukaryote. So, I mean, by definition, then, you are an animal. So there was no point in your evolutionary ancestry that an animal gave birth to a non-animal. Because of the law of monophyly, you are still an animal, and you always will be.
But hold it. An elephant and a pine tree, something happened. One's no longer an animal.
Let's clarify this because I think you guys are talking past each other, and I think Arne's asked this like multiple times, and I want to make sure that everybody gets equal time on this. So let's for clarification purposes, Arne, real quickly, can you explain what you mean by monophyletic clade, but specifically towards Ken's kind of definitions? What I think we need to isolate is that all the things you've talked about, the pine tree and mammals, are still eukaryotic, right? They're different kinds of eukaryotes, right? But they're still eukaryotic. And they came from something in evolutionary theory that was non-eukaryotic at one point, right? They have a shared common ancestry.
We don't even have to get into the genetics of the fossil record at this point. I mean, there's or embryology or any of the other things that confirm phylogenetics. We're just looking at the simple characters. We're looking at what careless Linnaeus would look at. So the commonality between the pine tree and the elephant is that they're eukaryotes.
Right.
Neither one started from an animal. Being a eukaryote doesn't mean animal. So it means it's referring to a cell that has a nucleus, right? And so that never changed. Now, at some later point, after the division between plants on one side and, you know, the animals on the other, then we have this. But then we have many further divisions before we get to trees and then conifers and then pine trees, just like we have many further divisions before we get to eutherian mammals and elephants and so forth.
Okay, so Kim, can you address that specifically for the audience, please? Because you do agree that trees and animals are all eukaryotic, right, Kent?
Correct. Well, okay. They all have a cell with a nucleus. That is correct. Plant cells and animal cells, they're very different in many other ways, but yes, they both have a nucleus. So that proves we're related. So because we both are eukaryotes, therefore elephants and pine trees are related. I'm just completely baffled at how a grown person could believe
that. I just mentioned that there are other categories that we can use. We're only right now looking at Linnaean characteristics. Sure. We haven't gone into your genetics or embryology or the fossil record or any of that. We're just looking at the characteristics right now.
Okay,
we want to make sure that we don't adopt a belief at the onset. Because, of course, that would be dishonest. And it would be dishonest to throw out any evidence that flies against whatever belief you want to adopt at the onset. So we're better off both not having a belief to start with.
Okay, well, let's look at the facts and the possibilities. Okay, let's look at the facts. Yeah. Pine trees are made up of cells, all of which, originally, the ones that are still living anyway, have a nucleus. The dead ones, of course, the internal tree, tree no longer has that. But yes, and elephants are made up of cells, and they have nucleus. I could look at that and say, this proves we have a common designer, because this system works really good.
You don't have cells. To go that far. You don't even have to.
You can construct
an entire tree of life, as Linnaeus did, without making that assumption. And you still come to the same inescapable fact.
You could also construct a tree of life and say, wow, look at the designer gave all this stuff the ability to reproduce.
Then again,
varieties.
You're making an assumption that is unjustified. We have to look at possibilities as well. Okay, so I know that you know that not everything is possible, because you've said many times about things that you don't understand that you think are impossible. So you know that we can't just say that anything is possible. You know that there's a limit, that there are things that are not possible. So we have to look, and before we can say that something is possible, we have to verify that the possibility exists. There has to be a precedent or a parallel or a verified phenomenon to indicate that such possibility exists. Now, we know that evolution happens. We've seen how it happens. We know various different aspects about it. We know quite a lot, actually, about the evolutionary process and the evolutionary history and so forth. And so we know that these things occur. They're observable, demonstrable, verifiable, repeatable directly. Now, do we have a possibility for magic imaginary friend using a conjuration spell?
You have already said several things which I would have to disagree with. We do not know that evolution happens by my definition.
Okay, so
of
you're saying, hold on, you're saying that the definition that we've already had.
Let him finish his answer.
Okay. In your mind, you know evolution happens. In my mind, I have a different definition of that. I think variations happen within the same kind, but they're limited to that kind.
But there's no definition of kind still given. That was the core of what we've been talking about for the last half hour, is trying to get you to define a kind as distinguished from a clade. Now, I've given the definition, and I've called you to give examples of that, and you failed to do so. What you have instead done was deny the very definition of evolution as being a fact. You would have agree, and you have described already how you accept certain aspects of evolution, and not just change within a species. You're talking about changes between species, which means you accept macroevolution as well. I know you defined it as something else because you have to use equivocation. But use the wrong definitions doesn't mean that your definitions are right. It means the scientific community has established what these definitions are, and you don't get to change them just for your audience.
and you don't get to put words in my mouth. I do not believe in macroevolution. By my
definition, you described what you described that you accept. What you said you accept meets the definition that scientists give for what macroevolution is. Microevolution is variation within a species. Macroevolution is variation between species, and this includes speciation, and you accept that speciation happens. So you accept that by definition, the actual, real definition, and not the false one you made up, that you accept what is actually really defined as macroevolution.
Let's make sure that Kent has equal time here, Aaron, if you can.
That would be wonderful.
I want to make sure, Kent, please, we're trying to make sure you have equal time.
I want to make sure
you guys are talking about the same things. And I understand both of your guys' positions. I've had many conversations with both of you gentlemen. Aaron is explaining it from a very scientific and precise way of looking at it. And what he's asking you is for you to define your terms in a way that is from a creationist point of view, and they don't mesh. And I think that's why we're having a communication failure here. When you're talking about speciation, Kent, what do you mean by macroevolution? What do you mean by speciation? How much of it do you accept? Is that something along the lines of what you want to know, Arne, as far as your questioning?
I don't think anybody's ever given a really hard definition of species. Is a dog and a wolf a different species, yet they're the same kind of animal? Is a dog and a coyote and a wolf? They're different species, Canis lupus, Canis domesticus, but they're the same kind. So, I do accept that speciation happens, but who is getting, they decided there's a new species of finch on the Galapagos Islands now because one flew over to a different island and crossbred with a different kind, different variety of finch. It still produced a bird. It still produced a finch. So it's because some group of scientists decide to call that a new species. That is not evidence for evolution. That's wishful thinking. That's SpongeBob imagination stuff. I agree. Variations happen. And I agree new species could be created if somebody wants to call that a new species. I don't know if the 200 species of squirrels are I think they have the same kind of animal. So, yeah, I think the word species is too flexible. I think the biblical word kind, able to bring forth, so all those 200 species of squirrels can probably bring forth babies. The squirrel and a pine tree cannot. They're different kinds. Squirrel and an elephant cannot. Whether squirrel and chipmunk, I don't know. That's a good question. I'll do some research on that, Aaron. I'll get back with you. I don't know about chipmunks if they're in the same kind or not. Great, good question. I will definitely work on that. But I think I could demonstrate that a squirrel and a pine tree are not the same kind. And if you choose to believe they got a common ancestor, that is your religion. There's no evidence for that. No evidence at all. That's a religion you believe in. And that's fine. This is America. You can have any religion you want. But you should admit it's a religion and quit calling it science. That's not science.
So the evidence that we have, both genetic and character-based, that we have these commonalities, and in addition to what we've seen in the fossil record, these are all the facts. And I think you would even agree with this definition of evidence that it is a body of objectively verifiable facts, are either exclusively, they're positively indicative of or exclusively concordant with one available position over any other. And these would confirm these beyond reasonable doubt. Would you accept that that is the definition of evidence, or that that is a working definition for the purpose of this discussion?
Well, yes, determining what a fact is. You mentioned that the genetic commonality, I think it's a fact, but whether that proves a common ancestor or common creator is the question. And you mentioned the fossil record.
You're interrupting him, actually, at this right now. Great. So hang on, Aaron. Well, I promise we'll get back to you, but go ahead, Ken.
I want you
to finish your statement, because I have been noticed both of you have been interrupting a little bit. So to be fair to everybody, Ken, finish what you're saying and then let Aaron respond, please.
Several times he has mentioned that the fossil record is somehow evidence to support his theory that they have a common ancestor. I would contend there is no such thing as a fossil record. There are bones in the dirt indicating they died. But why would you think a bone from the dirt could do something which no animal today could do, which is produce something? If you find squirrel fossils in the dirt, you're going to say this is a squirrel and it produced squirrels. That's all they produce today. But yet you think a bone in the dirt is capable of doing something no animal today can do, which has produced something other than its fundamentally fifth grade or five-year-old level kind of animal.
Once again, because of the law of monophyly, I clearly do not believe that anything ever becomes not what its ancestors were. I've explained this repeatedly. So I do not believe that. Hybridization, by the way, a finch crossing over to another island and then hybridizing with other finches is not speciation. It can be, but it's very, very limited. It's very, very limited. The vast majority of speciation events are just build-ups of genetic diversity. We have four different types of speciation that are now logged, and hybridization doesn't even account for any of these four. So these are just build-ups of genetic diversity in different isolated groups or even emerging within a same group.
Okay, well, let me ask you a simple question. Does this build-up of genetic diversity have any limits?
What limits would you propose? What limits might you be thinking of?
Okay, let's take limits on size as an example. Do you believe there's a limit to the size of dogs? Is it possible for dogs to ever become as big as a blue whale? There are animals as big as a blue whale, like the blue whale. So, is it possible for an animal? Is there a limit on size? Could you get a dog as big as Texas?
Godzilla is not possible, for example.
Very good. Very good. So there are limits to this variation.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Okay.
So there are what you're telling me is that there are structural limits imposed by gravity, but not actually by biodiversity. So there's no limit to biodiversity that you've yet given, only structural limitations according to physics, perhaps.
Correct. Now, why don't we get dogs as big as elephants?
Because of structural difficulties. When they exceed 200 pounds, they are beyond their ability to withstand to grow any larger because of the structure they already have. They have to adapt a more improved structure in order to exceed that size. And the same thing goes with the reason that dinosaurs were so big was because they had a system already built in that allowed that to happen without a backlash. They had avian respiration, so they had hollow bones that they could breathe through, which made them far more energetic and powerful than we are. So that dinosaurs and mammals of equal mass, the dinosaur will excel because it'll be lighter and faster and stronger.
Well, you said the dog is limited and can't become as big as an elephant. There are animals as big as an elephant. It's called an elephant.
There are animals that are as big as an elephant, but they have to, as I just said, and I'm going to have to repeat again, would then have to have a new adaptation to account for the larger size, because we also know bears come from dogs, and bears are, or not, they don't come from dogs, they come from the common ancestor, but bears are genetically linked to dogs, and bears have excessive size. They don't have the digitigrade gait and the hyperspeed that dogs have, different derivations from the commonality.
Well, in your religion, they're different.
It's not a religion because it's not faith-based, and it's not a belief system. It doesn't require belief. It doesn't teach belief. It discourages belief in favor of critical analysis and peer review.
Okay, well, Aaron, bears produce bears, dogs produce dogs. You say they came from a common ancestor. That is a belief. We never observed
that. Why is
it
a belief to see a genetic link? If you've got evidence that shows the genetics are there, that dogs and bears and seals and mustelids are all conoidean carnivores, and they're all genetically linked. If you can do a parental test using the genetics, the same as you say a Maureen Pulvers, you are the father. We show the genetic link. There is the evidence, not faith like you have, not just going on a book of old fables like you have. We have actual genetic evidence to confirm this.
So you have genetic evidence that a dog and a bear are related, and what is that evidence exactly? Because they have similar DNA? No, you didn't. You said, you said there's the word genetics is not, I want to be specific. What exactly makes you think that something was the father? You are the father of the bear and the dog. What exactly would make you think that? What part of the DNA structure? Is it the number of chromosomes? Is it the length of the chromosomes? Is it the arrangement of CATG? Exactly what is this evidence that you're saying, you're claiming is evidence for this common, for this ancestry, the parental aspect of the ancestor of dog and wolf, or dog and bear?
I explain this in a series where – I explain this in a video called Caniform Carnivore Cladogram Construction. I like alliteration. I can't help it. And there's a backup to this that also covers the cat side of the family tree. And these are in a series of videos, a five video series called Falsifying Phylogeny, which explains a number of other evolutionary principles, including the evolutionary laws that I just mentioned.
Well, can you just give me a two-minute summary here? What – What is your reason?
It is, as I just explained, and I'm repeating the explanation again. It's just like doing a parental test where you're matching the commonality to see whether this person is the father or that person is the father. You're just extrapolating further back.
And I asked you, I'll ask you again, maybe you'll get it this time. What exactly are you looking at to determine the parental?
I answered twice. I will answer a third time. Maybe you will be the one to get it this time, as I had it since the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we are just like a parental paternity test, where you're using a genetic mashup, right? Codon for codon, right? You're looking for the commonality between these genetic lines, genetic lineages. You're also looking at wherever they're applicable, ERVs and such. Whatever, I can't remember the other term, whatever other commonalities take factor in genetic comparison. You're doing a genome sequence comparison to identify the ancestry, just like you would trace whether, you know, you are Danish in ancestry or Jamaican or what have you. It's the same concept.
So you're saying someone did a genome sequencing of a dog and a bear and found out that they have a common ancestor based
on ERV?
Not just
some, lots of people. Because the thing about science is that it's also it has to be peer reviewed, which means that somebody does these tests and say, okay, I did these tests, and then other people have to go back and duplicate those tests and confirm that they get similar results, or they can confirm that this is what actually happens.
So you mentioned we should start with no belief whatsoever and just look at the evidence. Let's assume that we do study the bear and the dog and find out they have similar ERVs, they have similar genetic sequences. What then would you conclude from that? Would you consider the possibility that maybe the same author wrote the code?
The possibility, key word. Once again, I repeat, and I have to do that a lot here, that in order to establish whether there is a possibility, we have to show a precedent or a parallel or a verified phenomenon indicating that that possibility exists. And we have had, by your own admission, we have had speciation occur. We have seen evolution happening in real time. Not just in the fossil record, but also in the lab, live. So we know it occurs. And then we look at the characters, of the simple physical characteristics, you look between a description of bears and of dogs, and then we look in the fossil record, we also find bear dogs and dog bears. Literally, seriously. We find things, bear dogs and dog bears, both. And then we have common ancestors, basal to each, that would their physiology looks a little bit more like a wolverine. But basically, it's the common ancestor where it's still plantigrade, still like a dog, or it's still plantigrade like a bear, but still has a long tail like a dog.
Okay.
So we have a number of different facts. We have a body of different types of evidence, different bodies of evidence that all concord with each other. And you want me to consider the possibility, as yet unestablished, that a magic imaginary man made – went poof.
All right, so let's try to get this a little back on track a little bit. So Arne, you're saying there's a consilience of all these different branches of not just genetics, not just codons, not just ERVs, but comparative homologies and anatomy and a whole bunch of different other things. And Kent's basically saying, forget all that. There's a probability or possibility that it could be a common designer. That's
exactly.
Basically,
so the in the description where he asked for my two items of evidence for or my two best examples of evidence for evolution, I gave phylogenetics, which I've been trying to explain, and he's actually been explaining, but he doesn't understand that that is what he's explaining. And then the other thing, which is that we actually know things to be true, demonstrably, verifiably true about evolution, where nobody knows anything at all about any magic imaginary designer. There is no literally no possibility to consider. Because he can't even show me a kind, which would have to be the most basic thing any creationist should cough up at the onset before we even talk about this. If you want to talk about all animals being created, you'd have to show me which ones are the ones that are created. If you're going to accept that some degree of phylogeny applies, where's the cutoff point? That's what I'm asking. That's what the phylogeny challenge is.
Yeah, let's make sure Kent is able to address this specifically and give him equal time on this. So Kent, he's kind of asking you, what was the original kind as compared to what we know to be speciation events. So you're agreeing that speciation occurs. So can you differentiate between for us the what we know to be speciation, because you agree speciation occurs, to the original creative created kinds that were not derivated from some kind of original other species. So what are the original kinds that you're suggesting exist that supersede all the evidences that Aaron is providing for us? And we'll give you plenty of time to speak on this. So Aaron, let him go on this, please.
Thank you. I think I've answered it 5 or 6 times, but if they're able to bring forth, according to Genesis chapter 1, they're the same kind. Now, have they diversified? He keeps mixing the word species and kind. I don't use that word species very often because it's a flexible term. I think a dog and a wolf are different species, as I mentioned, yet they're the same kind of animal. There are 200 species of squirrels. They're probably the same kind of animal. There are 1,100 species of bats. They're probably the same kind of animal called a bat. But if you want to look at the similarities, I have in front of me an article from, let's see, where was this published? Farm and Garden Magazine, Monday, August 15th, 2005, about they deciphered the DNA of rice. And they said fruit flies have 13,600 genes in their DNA code. The humans have 20 to 25,000 genes. Rice has 37,544, and maize has 50,000. So we could make a phylogenetic tree, and if we live long enough, we're all going to be turned into maize, and the cows can eat us here. So I think the biblical, it's obvious that rice and humans and flies are different kinds. And there's a place called baraminology.com from the Hebrew word baramin, about kind, that is so far as I think they've said there are probably about 7,000 or 8,000 kinds of animals on land that breathe air. This would not include insects or fish that didn't have to go on the ark. About 7,000 kinds of animals probably went on Noah's ark. Some say even less than that, but I don't know. Let's just pick that number and say 7,000 to 8,000 is a reasonable number of kinds of original animals that had to come off the ark. A fish would do just fine in the flood, but I think that everybody should recognize that they're limited. I don't know exactly where the limit is, but we talked about the dog. Can they become as big as an elephant? No, but there are elephants that are as big as an elephant, and they certainly can't become as big as Texas. So certainly there are limits to the variations within the kind. There are sometimes there are physical limits because of bone structure, et cetera, or the percentage of oxygen in the air. Obviously, there were gigantic insects on this planet. I mean, 52-inch dragonfly fossils have been found. If you want to talk about the fossil record, they talk about 2-foot grasshoppers that they couldn't survive. They couldn't breathe today because they breathe through spiracles in their skin. They don't have a lung system like we do. So we could talk about fossils if you'd like. I have quite a large collection of fossils. I think all the fossils indicate something was very different on this planet, and I would take this to be before the flood came, and all the fossils, nearly all the fossils, probably formed because of one big flood event. So my definition of kind, and he keeps intermixing the word species, and please don't do that. If they can bring forth, they're the same kind. There's one kind of animal called a squirrel. There are now 200 species of squirrels. There's one kind of animal called a bat. There are now 1,100 species of bats. There are 13 species of, I think it was 13 species of panther. Okay, but they're still a cat. They're still the same kind of animal, and they probably came from a common ancestor. So I would say he has not demonstrated at all that there is any scientific evidence that a bat and a pine tree and an elephant and a squirrel are related, other than having similar DNA, which could just as well be the DNA code, the same author. If you look at all the books Mark Twain wrote, you'll notice that, excuse me, thousands of similarities because they have the same author. If you look at all the books in the world that are written in English, you will notice all of them use the same 26 letters. Wow. What does that prove? That the books wrote themselves or that's the code? The code with which you write English is the 26 letters of the alphabet, and the code with which DNA is written is the same because we have the same author of this code, and his name is God, not some man. This is God himself, who will be the judge one day. So I'm trying to answer the question. He keeps asking it over different, but I think I have answered. I apologize. The law of monophilia that he keeps talking about is that they are always going to produce the same kind of offspring, and I agree. But yet he thinks a pine tree and an elephant have an ancestor, therefore somewhere along the line that law didn't work.
I'm not sure.
Why would that law have not worked?
Yeah,
why
do you imagine that? That's kind of involved in that there, Kent.
I mean, because you've said everything wrong here. I have never once, not one time, mixed kind with species, though you repeatedly have, and I have cautioned you against that. You ramble on about irrelevant ideas you don't understand, but you obviously have not answered my question once. And I will paraphrase that for you in a moment. But I first want to know the answer to the question I just asked. Where did that law not work? I mean, so we have according to one possibility that we actually know is a possibility, and the other one is not a possibility. We have an evolutionary possibility, and we have a common ancestor that is a single-celled eukaryote. Now, the first plants were also single-celled. The definition of mammal is when those cells combine into multicellular, and we've actually seen that occur directly in the lab, too. So even that level of macroevolution has been directly observed. So at what point did that rule of monophyly or law of monophyly break down?
You said three different things here. You said you have seen single-celled animals produce, or single-celled, I think you said animals, produce multicellular animals in the laboratory.
Wrong. I will clarify that again. Okay. By definition, animals are multicellular.
There are no such thing as singular cell animals.
You can't have a single-celled animal. By definition, when you have multicellular eukaryotes form together and then also form an internal digestive tract, then you can classify it as an animal.
So you're talking about a colony of cells that has a digestive tract, and this is, are you saying this is evidence?
If it has an internal digestive tract, then yes. If we're talking about a colony of eukaryotes with an internal digestive tract, that would meet the criteria for the character-based criteria for what we call an animal. However, in phylogeny, it's based on your ancestry, not necessarily your characters. For example, whales and snakes are still classified as tetrapods, even though neither of them have four legs anymore, and many of them are not even adapted for life on land anymore because evolutionary ancestry. Likewise, a human would be defined as having a brain of a certain capacity and, you know, having two arms, two legs, and so forth. But people are born without any number of these criteria. We would not say they were not human anymore because we base the classification on their ancestry. So they are still human even if they're born without those characteristics.
So all the ancestry from here on out will, like, for example, humans, they're all going to still be humans. They'll all still be mammals. They'll still be all eukaryotes.
No matter how much they change.
No matter how long down the line. Now, Kent has made the claim, though, that for some reason the law of monophyly has broken down at some point, and I'm not sure if he's answered that yet, where that broke down.
He hasn't answered anything yet. He hasn't answered what a kind is. He's the one who keeps mixing them. Yeah, well, I keep saying they bring forth. Yeah, he keeps going back to the definition of species as if that were the definition of kinds, and he keeps excusing that when he describes a kind, every time, kind of kind, as he has been doing, like the squirrel kind and the bat kind, those are the squirrel clade and the bat clade. He doesn't understand there's a difference between kind and clade, and the difference is that a kind began with a special creation. He hasn't shown that it's possible. He's damn sure hasn't shown any that there's any evidence of that, and he hasn't been able to dismiss the evidence that there is for evolution. All he can do is insist that it is a religion when it clearly, absolutely, certainly is not.
Now, Kent, you said the original, you think there's like 7,000 original kinds. Now, you saying those are the created kinds? 7,000 original created kinds.
Let's start with that as a working hypothesis. There were 7,000 created kinds. This is only of animals. This is not insects. This is not plants. This is not fish. Animals on land in whose nostrils was the breath of life that had to go on to Noah's Ark. I don't know how many kinds of created plants there were or kinds of created fish. That would be a different story. But let's start with the working hypothesis that there are original 7,000 created kinds. They have now diversified into millions of species. I agree. Speciation happens. I do not think that's any evidence for evolution. I think the speciation is always limited, very limited, in many ways. And I don't think there's any way Aaron's going to come up with any answer to how we get new information. For instance, this single-celled creature that develops a colony and has a digestive tract now has to develop wings and the ability to fly. This is adding information that they're just. I'd love to hear his answer. Where does the additional information for this cell come from, or this cluster of cells, to learn to fly, to learn to reproduce, to learn to eat, to learn to seek out food, to learn to avoid, you know, unpleasant conditions, be it temperature or sunlight or whatever? There are thousands of features that today's animals have. Obviously, the ability to move about, to seek a mate, to seek food, to ingest and digest food, and this had to come from a single cell. It looks to me like additional information is being added. Where does this come from? Which is, I think, another giant problem for those who believe, capital B, believe in evolution.
I'm guessing by the space that I'm allowed to speak in.
Oh, sure. Yeah, please do. Yes.
Okay. So you said that what you proposed just now, which again is you've just expressed how you don't understand what you're talking about, but everybody listening to this has gathered that much by now.
You said
that this would be that what you propose is a working hypothesis. In what actually makes it either working or a hypothesis? What experiment could we use to vindicate this idea if it were true or falsify it if it is not?
Okay, let's see if we can cross an elephant and a pine tree. Let's get the sperm or egg of an elephant and the pollen from a pine tree and see if we can get them to produce something. Or let's look at the Bible says they will bring forth after their kind. If we start with 7,000 kinds of animals, can we get them to interbreed? You think it's possible for a bat to interbreed with a bird?
Are you saying that God created a first pair of bats and also created a first pair of birds? Is that your answer to my question?
I don't know how many first pairs of birds there were. Maybe there were 50 pairs.
Okay, so that is not an answer to my question, then.
I am answering your question.
But you're answering that you do not have an answer is literally what your answer is.
You don't have the answer. My answer is there are probably many original created kinds of birds. I don't think you can put all birds.
Okay.
You put birds in the same kind as pine trees.
Okay. Yeah. They're both eukaryotes. So your experiment by taking the egg of an animal, a mammal, and combining that with a pine tree, having no recollection to the fact that we're talking about animals on one side and plants on the other, you think that this verification of evolutionary law somehow refutes evolutionary law and instead supports the magic imaginary friend theory?
Well, let's avoid the pine tree then, if that's your stumbling block. Let's take an elephant and a whale.
I'm not the one with the stumbling block here. Let me help you with this. I can clarify this question a little bit better. We'll just do it as a short series of yes or no. Are mallards related to pockets, wood ducks, and muscovies?
I don't know.
God could have created separate kinds for pockets. Pockets could be a kind unto themselves, even though they're all ducks.
He didn't create a duck kind.
And ducks and chickens are in the Galliform kind, and Galliforms are also with the Neonace and Paleonace in the bird kind, along with Eornaths and Ichthyornis and Enantiornis and a number of others, and Archaeopteryx, I guess, as well. At what point do we have a created kind? Where is the evidence to indicate the possibility of a creator?
Well, where is your evidence that a duck kind and a whale kind are related?
Well, the fact that you can't define what a kind is probably the first problem. But the fact that they are both within the same parent categories, they are both animals, for example.
That proves we're related. And plus, don't forget.
They're still the same kind, doesn't it?
Well,
what the actual definition of a kind is, which is where the clade begins with a special creation. So are you saying that God created a certain group of ducks and then created another certain group of ducks, and he created a kind of mallards and a kind of pockets, that he created every different species individually? Is that what a kind is? Or is it something larger? Is it a larger category than that?
You just used the word kind and species in the same sentence, and yet you said you don't do that. Go back.
And I distinguished them. I did, because I don't mix them the way you keep accusing. You're the one that keeps saying if they bring forth, which is the definition of species, not kind. I keep correcting you on this, but you do not correct yourself. That's why after 20 years, you still repeat the idea that I'm supposed to believe that we came from a rock, even though I've seen a dozen people correct you on this very point, and you've never fixed it.
It doesn't need fixed. Evolution does teach.
Yeah, nobody believes. No evolutionary biologist, nobody promoting evolutionists believes we came from a rock. Nobody. That is a lie on your part, which you have never corrected.
If I can interject, if you don't mind, I've actually brought the same thing up to you a couple of years ago. I have never seen any evolutionary biologist or anybody advocate that evolution teaches that we came from a rock. I have only heard that from creationist source. So can I ask you, do you have any citation that we can look at from a evolutionary textbook that says evolution claims we came from a rock?
I think I showed very clearly from dozens of textbooks. You tell me.
You didn't answer the question at all. You showed not one textbook that supports that argument
ever in your life. Not just tonight. Never.
Aaron, this original cell that you say became the ancestor of the whales and the pine trees, what did that come from?
We have to assume that it's the ancestor because we have other lines of evidence that draw that. We're only going to the right now. We're only talking about the facts and the possibilities as we see them.
Yeah, which textbook has that in there? Because I've asked that question before, actually, and I still haven't got an answer. And I'm curious. I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible here. I really would like an answer to that question because it's been brought up before, and I've had other creationists say, there are textbooks that say, according to evolutionary theory, we evolved from a rock. And I have yet to find a single textbook that says that. If you have one, I honestly would like to pay for that, and I will read that.
There's not a textbook that even allows for that.
I am calling it up right now. But in the meantime, while I get this in my PowerPoint, I have like 10,000 slides now. Do you believe this original cell came from a primordial soup, which came from in the oceans or a nice warm pond or something like Darwin. Where did this original cell come from? Where did the first living cell come from?
I did a video on this also simply titled Abiogenesis, which is set as an instructional material for middle school students, in which I explain that I don't necessarily subscribe to just the primordial soup. That's a possibility, I suppose. There are a number of overlapping ones. There are more than a dozen different processes that are distinctly different from each other, and none of them qualify as the evolutionary processes, but which also lend – any number of them could be true at the same time. Almost all of them could be true at the same time.
Okay, so I'll ask the question once again. Where did the first cell come from? What does Aaron think is the answer to where did the first living cell come from?
As was explained in the video when I answered this the first time, giving it again, let's see, how can I paraphrase this? I think the RNA first example is probably the best supported. I think everybody universally agrees with that.
Either the RNA world hypothesis or some kind of related.
Yeah,
to
the
that.
Primordial soup was it was a good one for
That's
its time.
That's like the 70s.
Yeah, but RNA first appears to be it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with the cell, because that's what he's asking about, is he wants to go to several – he wants to skip a whole bunch of different stages and go just to the first cell. And then we're talking about hypercycles where you have a phospholipid bilayer, which already includes replicative RNA, not DNA yet. But I think before we can classify as life, we don't necessarily have to have DNA yet, but it's enough to just have RNA.
Self-replicating RNA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, and where did this RNA come from? You agree? I think we both agree that RNA.
Why are we
is
talking
incredible.
About that instead of evolution, which is the thing we were supposed to be discussing tonight?
Yeah, the question that was posed.
You asked me a clear question. Is the evidence that you believe you came from a rock? I'm trying to get. I think if you guys would admit it, this RNA had to come from the water somewhere, from minerals in the water. And the minerals came from a rock.
Kent, no.
And the planet Earth.
No.
Down.
That's actually not the hypothesis, Kent. But the question I've asked this before, and I know Aaron's frustration on this quite well. For evolution to occur, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this, Aaron, but for evolution, you have to have genetics. You have to have genes. You have to have a change of allelic frequency in a population.
But also to address his misunderstanding about this, when there was the Murchison chondrite that landed in Australia in 1969, which was that would he, you know, we would all accept that that was a rock, but it was a rock that was also found to contain, you know, many different dozens, I think, of different amino acids and some unknown chemicals of extreme complexity. But they were not themselves rock. So at 0 point in our ancestry, were we ever descended from a rock? Nobody, nowhere, never, ever thought this. You have been wrong your whole life about this. Fix that error.
So this meteorite that was found in Australia is your answer. It contained things. In other words, life came from outer space. Is that what you're trying to imply?
Wrong. Oh,
wrong.
What I was explaining is the distinction between the amino acids and the rock matrix they were found in. They are not rock themselves, nor were we.
Okay, would you tell me, are amino acids made of the 92 naturally occurring elements?
Being a part of a natural occurring element does not in any sense make you a rock. If you freeze oxygen. Would you call that a rock?
Well, a supercooled crystal like ice, I guess, or I'm not sure if
that's... We're talking about oxygen right now.
Yeah, I don't know if...
Frozen hydrogen. Can you freeze hydrogen to make it into a rock?
You're diverting to a different topic now.
The same topic. The same topic you would like to divert away from. But yeah, it's if we cannot ever refer to these things as rocks simply because they're frozen, because they're not actually minerals, then we cannot call them rocks. At no point ever were we rocks. No evolutionary biologist ever thought that we came from a rock. Why would you believe something so dumb as that evolutionary biologists think we came from rocks? Why do you keep repeating this lie no matter how many times you've been corrected?
Well, I haven't been corrected.
You've been corrected right now. So what
evolutionary biologist in history has made that claim that we evolved from rocks? I'm 48 years old, and I've never heard that except for creationists say it, ever.
Okay, let's I'm looking for the slides in a textbook now, but I have hundreds of textbooks. Do you believe the Earth cooled down 4.6 billion years ago?
Kent, with all due respect, you are changing the subject right now.
No. This is exactly the point.
Exactly the point was for you to identify kinds. That was the only way that you could deal with my two items of evidence that I gave, was that we know things that are true to be, we know things that are verifiably, demonstrably, observably true about evolution, where we have no such information about creationism. That's one you have failed to address. You simply denied that it exists, and you redefined everything through the fallacy of equivocation, and you have failed to address the phylogeny challenge. So you can't address my issue with phylogeny either.
Well, we're on to five different topics. Let me answer the one about the rock.
Well, the rocks. These are the same topics. Okay. They're just...
Okay. I have in front of me the answer to your question. Here is a first grade textbook in my collection, which says, Earth has changed much since its formation 4.5 billion years ago. Do you guys believe the Earth is 4.5 billion years old? Or 4.6 or 4.6297 and 3 months.
I will have to defer to the experts on this because I don't know the thermodynamics or the physics. There are other people who do that. I do phylogeny.
I'm showing you from the textbook, a first grade, I could show you from every year textbook, that the Earth formed 4.5 or 4.6 billion years ago, and it was a hot ball of rock. This is what the books teach.
Okay. Is metal also rock?
Well, yeah,
I've heard that it was rock and metal. My textbook said it was rock and metal. Matter of fact, I think my textbook said rock, metal, and gases.
So did this hot ball of rock?
How do you distinguish rock from metal?
That would be an interesting question. I think there are quite a few metals.
Especially since our bones are made of calcium, and that's considered a metal too.
Sure.
And you've already established that oxygen cannot be considered a rock, even if you freeze it.
Before you dance around the subject,
again,
I'm showing you the answer.
That nobody ever believed that we came from rocks.
You guys are talking over each other now. Kent, what you just quoted from that textbook, I just don't think answers that question. That doesn't involve evolution. Evolution is something that requires genes to have a change of genetic frequency of the alleles. Whether the initial sources, you can go back to where they came from, the Earth, where they came from stellar nuclear synthesis, where they came from the Big Bang. You can always go back where the elements came from, but we're not asking where the elements came from. We're asking you, you're saying that evolutionary theory states that we evolved from rocks. I have yet to ever see that, and what you quoted has nothing to do with evolution.
Well, that's where in the last 20 years, maybe because of my seminar, I'll take credit for that.
I'm almost 50. I've never heard it ever before in my life except for what you have said in the past and other creationists.
I'm still not seeing anywhere it
has said that we have evolved from a rock.
Well, then God sent me here to help you then, because the textbooks clearly teach the Earth cooled down 4.5 billion years ago, and it was a hot ball
of rock.
But
that's planetary formation. That's not evolution.
Right. When do we start with evolution?
You're not up to the evolutionary part yet. You're at planetary formation.
Yeah. We're not talking about concretion here. We're talking about evolution.
You can go back to the nebula hypothesis, but that doesn't get you to evolution yet.
And even if we were to do even if we were to misdefine it the way he is here, where he wants to take, you know, descent with genetic and inherent genetic modification and somehow extrapolate that to planetary concretion, still we didn't come from rocks.
Yeah,
because this is obviously not a planet just of rock. It's also rock and metal and gas and other things that don't qualify as either of these things, like amino acids and so forth. Just being made of chemical, he's already admitted, does not mean rock. If you can freeze oxygen and you still wouldn't call it a rock, just like you wouldn't call ice a rock, then it's not rock because it's not a mineral. So we're done. You're wrong, no. Kent. Correct your error.
We're not done, and you are wrong, and I have nothing to correct. Now, the textbooks teach 4.6 billion years ago, the Earth cooled down. It was a hot ball of rock. From that rock, the gases escaped and made an atmosphere of oxygen. From that
rock. So you're saying oxygen is a rock?
No, it came from the rock.
Okay, but oxygen doesn't come from rock.
Oxygen. Many of the rocks contain oxygen.
Oxygen is an element.
I agree.
What mineral does oxygen come from?
I don't know, but I can show you where the text
doesn't come from a mineral, Kent.
The textbooks teach the Earth began as a hot ball of rock, and everything came from there.
Does hydrogen come from rock?
Apparently so.
How would that be apparent?
Well, you get a chemistry book and see how many rocks or minerals contain hydrogen in part of their chemical equation.
Well, many will contain the simplest of all elements, but that doesn't mean it comes from rock. You don't need rocks to create hydrogen. As a matter of fact, you need hydrogen to create rocks.
Wow. You asked me to point out where the textbooks teach this, and I show this
and
clearly in my video.
And you failed utterly. The sad thing is you don't know that you face-planted. That's the disturbing thing.
No,
or maybe that you do, but you realize that donors won't see it if you can gloss over it somehow. But hydrogen does not come from rocks. You can combine two hydrogens to make lithium, for example, and you can combine helium, and then combine a third one to make lithium, and so on. And you can get up to rocks, but you can't get hydrogen from rocks because rocks may contain hydrogen, but rocks don't produce hydrogen.
So according to the theory in the textbooks, the Earth was a hot ball of rock 4.6 billion years ago, and the gases came out of those rocks. I didn't write it.
Which means that the rocks did not produce the hydrogen. The hydrogen pre-existed them, and still nobody, no evolutionary biologist ever believed we came from a rock. Now, if we can get past that, which I know you're never going to concede this error, because when have you ever conceded any error, no matter how obvious? We're still getting to the two points of evidence that I brought up, which you failed to address, either one of them. Now, if you want to get off of phylogenetics, fine. Just declare your failure there. Otherwise, I'll have to paraphrase the question again and see how you fail to answer it again. Or we can go to the other one, if you like, and we can see how you fail to address that.
Okay, let's take the phylogenetics one. What you have, Aaron, as evidence is lines on a piece of paper.
Except that we've already proved that it's not that at all. Can you draw lines on a piece of paper to a cat from a dog? So you can include your family of dogs. Are they a family of dogs only because we drew lines? Or is there some other way that people have decided whether there's a family of dogs? And whether the Borophagians or the wolves or the Lycanopictus, whether the painted African wild dog, are they part of dogs? Is it because somebody drew a line on a piece of paper? Or is there some other thing they drew the line?
I have a textbook showing lines on paper connecting dogs and pine
trees.
Does
it explain the reason that they drew the lines? Does it explain the evidence why they drew the lines?
No.
They just drew the line because they wanted to, just what, willy-nilly, so they can just draw lines from dogs to whales so that whales are now part of the dog kind? Because you can draw lines that way. Can you show me a textbook where they've done that? Where they've identified whales as a subset of dogs?
I did a Google search yesterday on systematics.
Is that a yes or a no?
I'm showing you a picture. Well, you can't see
it. Is that a yes or a no?
I'm answering your question.
Are you answering it with a yes, or are you answering it with a no?
Aaron,
either one?
There are many other ways to answer
questions. Give me your explanations after you tell me if it's yes or no.
Okay. If 2 plus 2 equals 4, it would be a yes or no question.
You can't answer yes or no.
You're interrupting again. many questions cannot be answered with a yes or no, like what color is the sky? That's not a yes or no question. I'm showing you on the screen, which you can see when you watch my PowerPoint. It lines on paper.
Your camera hasn't worked since this podcast began.
It will be up on my YouTube channel, Kent Hovind Official.
Your YouTube subscribers can see what you're not showing me, but at least admit that you're not showing it to me.
I'm telling you where I found it, and you can watch my YouTube anytime you'd like.
Oh, I do not want to subject myself to that. I don't like fiction.
That's why I don't watch yours either, but that's okay. Google search systematics, just the word systematics. It shows a picture of a lizard, a snake, a crocodile, and a bird, and they have lines drawn connecting them to a common ancestor.
Lizard, snake, crocodile, bird.
Bird. Yep, it's okay. A cardinal.
So you have two lepidosaurs and two archosaurs, all three of which are diapsid, all four of which are diapsid. Okay, I follow you so far. Go ahead.
So you think birds and crocodiles are related. Is that correct?
They are archosaurs, both of them.
So they are related.
Meaning that they are related within the confines of the class or the clade Archosauria, yes.
So they had a common ancestor. A crocodile and a bird
that's
had a common ancestor.
That's indicated in the fossil record. Right now, if we're only talking about Linnaean characteristics of classification, then yes, birds are archosaurs just as are crocodiles.
So you're saying birds and crocodiles are related because...
I'm saying that birds are in the same category as crocodiles because they're both archosaurs. Okay, there is other evidence that we can get to that shows that they are related.
Okay,
one of them being...
You have a group of evidence, and by the way, evidence is a word. You can look Google search it, but
you have a group quantifiable. You don't count evidences.
It is a word. Okay, it is in the dictionary. A word.
But it's not countable, so it's grammatically incorrect to say evidence says.
I'm glad you think it is, okay, but it is in the dictionary. Now, this shows a line between a crocodile and a bird to a common ancestor. Mm-hmm. You say there are evidences that indicate this is true because somebody decided to call them the same and put them in the same category.
Wrong. Not because somebody decided to call them the same thing. As I said, Carolus Linnaeus obviously wasn't happy with realizing that humans were apes or the apes were humans, and he couldn't reconcile that. He obviously had huge dilemmas with that. And his dilemma was with the religious community because he knew that he would be under the ban of all ecclesiastics if he were to admit this.
And you think that's why he did it. Okay. Well, this is called
in
the text.
What's why he did what?
You think he really did believe in evolution, but didn't dare say it because of the
belief in? Because first of all, it's not a belief; it's something that's indicated by the facts. Secondly, he didn't even know about evolution; didn't even think it was a possibility, so never considered it. And so, this is why it was such a dilemma for him when Darwin came up with natural selection and found that it was actually possible to derive new species from other species. Then he realized how this tree of life that Linnaeus had discovered, he found out the answer that explained the problem that Linnaeus couldn't answer himself.
So Darwin counted 14 species of finches on the islands, and that proves finches and crocodiles are related.
If you extrapolate, if you have any idea what you're talking about and extrapolate it, yes. There's an awful lot that you refuse to look at that indicates that. Yes.
I'll look at anything. I think this.
You haven't looked at anything I've shown you so far. I would genuinely love to help you with this, but you are really having a problem. I could try to summarize in another way, because we brought up cats before. I mean, would you say that Bengal tigers are related to Burmese tigers and all other tiger species?
Probably so. Yes, sir.
Probably. So we're not even talking about, there's not even a probability that God created individual tiger species. So they all had a common ancestor that was a tiger.
No, there is a probability that there were several original kinds of tigers. I don't know. I've said that many times.
Several original kinds. So God created the Burmese tiger and the Bengal tiger and all the other original tiger species, so they don't have a common ancestor at all.
I didn't say that. You're the one saying that. I said, I'll say it again. Maybe you'll get it this time. Okay, I said, I don't know how many original kinds of tigers there were. There might have only been two tigers. There might have been eight tigers.
Again. As I said, if evolution from common ancestry is not true and some special flavor of creation is of unidentified kinds is true, then there would be some surface levels in a cladogram where you would accept an actual phylogeny. But then there must also be subsequent levels in that twin nested hierarchy where things are not the biologically related anymore. And at that point, it would be magically created separate kinds. You haven't shown me even the possibility of kinds yet.
I'm looking at a phylogenetic systematics drawing taken from the internet yesterday when I thought we were going to have this discussion, but because of technical problems, we did not. It shows a whale and a horse and a camel all having a common ancestor. This okay. is what they show the kids. I'm looking at another drawing taken off the internet yesterday, and you can watch Kent Hovind Official, and I'll even buy you a Pepsi to drink. I'm not going to buy you beer, but I'll buy you Pepsi to drink while you watch it, showing the panther and the dog and the otter and the skunk related, as I mentioned before, and this is how they classify them. Darwin saw 14 varieties of finches. He then jumped to the wild conclusion, and he said so on page 170 of his book. He said, it's a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space should be related to each other. This is a non sequitur. This conclusion does not logically follow from the argument. The argument is
there does.
Okay, in your mind, in your mind, it does. That. I know. In your mind,
not in my mind, but in the actual reality that we can demonstrate, since you know all these different finches, they're different species of finches, and he was coming out of a belief system, or you know, where people had previously believed that species were immutable, and he came to the realization that species are not immutable, and that there are features, that there is this mechanism that could derive these other different species of birds from one common ancestor, i.e., a clade, not a kind. A clade. Once again, for the nth time, the difference between a clade, which you keep calling kinds, but it's actually clades, the difference between a clade and a kind is that a kind begins with an event of special creation. You haven't shown any two items that are different kinds, but within what science would consider to be the same clade. You failed utterly to do that, despite every repetition of that question. Can you now address that question, or should we go to the other thing you're going to inevitably fail at?
Your definition of kind is if they're eukaryotes, they're the same kind. That is crazy.
My definition of kind is, as I just explained and repeatedly has repeated to you, that it is a clade that begins with a special creation. That's my definition of kind. Now, a clade will be a category of animals that includes all its descendants, and eukaryote is one of these. Trees are in it. Elephants are in it. You are in it. By admission, all these things are eukaryotes. So it's not my definition that's doing it. By your agreement, they are all eukaryotes.
So the dictionary definition I got yesterday, cladistics, a method of classification of animals and plants according to the proportion of measurable characteristics that they have in common. It is
and as I already explained, the problem that your layman's dictionary approaches is that it doesn't include the monophyletic classification that it must include all of its ancestors, or excuse me, all of its descendants, because that's what a clade is. That's the simplest definition of a clade, and your layman dictionary didn't get that right. That's the problem with using a layman dictionary for scientific description. It's difficult to get a layman dictionary to even properly define what an animal is, because they often describe single-celled animals, and there is no such thing.
So the whole world's been waiting for Aaron to come along and write the dictionary to tell us the truth about what these words mean. Okay. Well, write your dictionary. That'll be great. Post it on YouTube or on wherever you want to put it, Wikipedia or something. I'm just saying the Bible word kind is very clear that if they can bring forth. You think a pine tree and a whale are the same kind of creature, or an elephant.
Hang on.
As anything else. There is no such thing as a kind, and I'm getting you to demonstrate that yourself by failing repeatedly, consistently, to show that there are kinds. Show me two kinds.
Elephant and pine tree are a different kind
God
of life form.
God down and created elephants, and from that we got the different species of elephants, and they do not include mammoths and mastodons, because those are different, those are not elephants. So God created separately mammoths and mastodons and loxodonts and other such things. He only created elephants. And I guess each one of these individual species is a different kind, according to you?
Well, it could be the African elephant and the Asian elephant have a common ancestor, but that does not prove.
Let's go from what it could be. Give me two examples of kinds. Same question been asking you since the beginning. Give me two kinds.
Same answer I've given you since the beginning.
Which you haven't answered once. You're still going to clade instead of a kind. The difference being a clade is a group of animals that includes all its descendants. We can go with elephant, we can go with squirrel, we can go with bat, any of the ones that you mentioned. The difference between a clade and a kind is that a kind is a clade that starts with an event of special creation. So show me two special creations that science would consider closely related? Same question been asking for an hour.
How about we ask for one? Would that be acceptable, Aaron, if there's one kind, create a kind? We'll start there. Especially when it comes to elephants, mastodons, and things like that nature. What would be a created kind from that original kind that all species and pachyderms and mastodons and woolly mammoths came from?
And then we got to include Sirenians, too.
Sirenians,
also the common ancestor of Sirenians. So manatees are part of the elephant kind, if you want to include that way.
There's 30 or 40 different things that you could probably throw in there. But what would you call that original kind?
Hold it. Don't forget to include all the planets, because they're made of the same elements. So they're the same kind also. They all have the same 92 elements.
Is it possible, Kent, that you think that other people can listen to you and think that that was a smart answer
from
you?
That had nothing to do with what I just asked.
I don't understand how you guys can't get it. Let me.
You don't understand. Just leave the sentence there. We could end the show on that sentence, because that's the summary that I think everybody's gathered so far.
Honestly, I'm trying to be fair as possible. I really am, and I'm just trying to clarify things for the audience and for the people that are involved in the discussion here. I'm not trying to show any kind of favoritism for anything. I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page, and I asked you a question, Kent, in regards to what would be the original created kind that had been the predecessor of things like elephants and alpacoderms and woolly mammoths, and you answer something in relation to planets, and I'm not seeing the correlation there.
Well, this is because he keeps changing the definition of kind to include something I never said. He keeps saying, "Well, we
the definition." I'm using the same definition consistently. It's that you don't understand what that definition is.
Oh, I understand.
And you're using the wrong one. You're describing clades.
You're saying
you understand what a clade is? A clade is the thing you keep describing. The difference between a clade and a kind is that a kind begins with a special creation. So show me two different clades that began with a special creation as opposed to a common ancestor. Give me that.
I'm not going to concede that a clade and a kind are the same thing. So don't put those words in my mouth.
No, they're not. Okay. I'm not putting those words in your mouth. I'm saying they're different. I'm the one saying they are different. You're the one that it keeps confusing them.
Oh, I'm not confused at all. Listen carefully. A whale,
keep describing a clade and calling it a kind without making any reference at all to their original creation, which is the key thing that makes a clade a kind, is whether it has been specially created. So show me the special creations, those two things that were specially created that science would consider to be in the same clade.
Well, I don't know what science would consider to be in the same clade, but
I showed you. Okay, then just admit that you can't answer the question, and we'll move to the next one.
I have answered it many times.
You have failed to answer, and you said you can't answer. You just won't admit it clearly because you don't want your listeners to know that you can't answer.
Oh, Aaron, listen carefully. Elephants are different than pine trees. They are a different kind of
life. So are you saying that
form.
God created elephants mastodons and mammoths separately?
Here you are changing. I'm saying God created elephants.
I'm not changing it. I'm not the one changing it.
Stop interrupting, please. I'm saying God created elephants and pine trees separately, whether elephants and mastodons.
You are saying that God created elephants separate from mammoths, separate from mastodons?
I didn't say that. I didn't.
Okay, then that's where we get into the overarching challenge. So you're saying that elephants and mammoths were all part of the same kind then?
I don't know. Elephants and mammoths may be the same kind, but elephants and pine trees are not.
So you don't know. If you can't show me an example,
you think elephants and pine trees are the same kind?
It comes down to a yes or no question. Can you show me two created kinds that science would consider to be in the same clade? Can you? It's just yes or no. Yeah, can you do it?
I think elephants. Let's assume elephants and mammoths.
It's not a yes and it's not a no. Can we take that as a no?
What color is the sky? Yes or no? Come on, you moron.
Calling me a moron will not hide your own willful ignorance of this subject. I am You are the one who knows dick about Jack. And everybody can watch this and see that.
Elephants,
so you cannot answer the phylogeny challenge, nor will you even attempt to. You won't even hear out the question properly. Understand it.
I'm giving you a clear answer, and I do understand
You can't give me an answer. Did God specially create elephants? Separate from, so the African elephant and the Indian elephant are together in one kind, but the mammoth is a different kind, a different special creation?
I don't know.
Thank you. That's the answer. You don't know. So you can't answer the challenge.
You think elephants and pine trees are the same kind?
Yes, they're both eukaryotes.
Okay, if you think an elephant and a pine tree are the same kind of life form,
except that's your... If we're talking about clades now, because this is the one you keep confusing. I do not believe in a special creation, so it's not a kind. It's a clade. It's a clade because it includes all of its descendants, right? So it includes elephants, and it includes pine trees, and it includes you, and it includes raccoons, and it includes grass, and it includes fungus.
That's proof for all... Plus, everything. Don't forget the most important thing. You can draw lines between them. That's proof right there.
You can draw lines too, but they would be meaningless if you don't put reasons behind them, as I can.
You can put a line. You can put a reason behind drawing a line between a pine tree and an elephant.
Yes, they're both eukaryotes. That's the reason.
That's proof we're related. I don't know why I never thought of that before. Gee,
they are both related in the system of classification that puts us both in the same category of eukaryote. Correct. We are both in that same category, right?
We are both. How about let's classify those that contain oxygen? How would that be a clade? Creatures that contain oxygen, would that include Venus?
Everything that's alive.
Alive. Well, if we're going to make a different definition, you decided if it has a nucleus in the cell, therefore it must be related.
I didn't decide that.
Okay. Well, what if it contains oxygen? I bet Venus has oxygen on it. That's got to be in the same clade then.
You're avoiding the subject now.
Clades can be derived characteristics.
I agree that Kent Colvin failed to address the phylogeny challenge, and then we move on to the second one. I don't know
guys,
how
to... Hold it. Like when we started...
You guys are talking past each other. Hang on. Kent, go ahead, please. Clades have to do with derived characteristics,
I
don't think oxygen falls into a derived heritable characteristic, but go ahead.
We agreed to go an hour and a half to 2 hours. It has been 2 hours. I have 20 people or 15 people out here waiting for me to haul them home. We usually have our Bible study this time at night for 30 minutes. Now, let's do another one. I am not the least bit afraid of this. And I'll listen to the tape, to this YouTube that we're going to put up. And you can see my pictures that I put up. Kent Hovind Official. And you can call me anytime, 855-BIG-DINO, extension 3, and I'll answer the phone and talk to you. But I think I have answered the question dozens of times that a kind is able to bring forth. Oh, I know you don't think I have, but I think the listening audience
Nobody
do it.
Thinks you
we,
have.
We
all
will do
know
a
you
survey.
Haven't answered the question. You we haven't
will do
produced
a survey.
Two kinds yet that meet that classification.
Okay, do you want to do a survey, Kent? I mean, we can arrange for something. We have well over 700 people watching at this moment. I don't even know half the people watching, and that's unusual. I know a lot of the names, but we can arrange for something where we can get maybe a random sampling to see what people have thought about this. And I'm curious myself.
Sure.
I'd like to see what the general consensus is. I'm just reading the live feed, and just by going to the live feed, and I'm not trying to be should be biased here, but just going by the live feed, I think right now everybody has said that you haven't answered the questions that have been posed to you, pretty much.
Well, let the audience do the next decide, and we'll put that on Twitter and the
let's do that on Twitter or something, and we will make a survey on that. Is that cool, Arend? Okay. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm all for that. Okay. If we're going to do this again, since we haven't addressed the second item of evidence at all,
What is your second evidence?
That we actually know things and can show things to be true of evolution where we can't show dick about jack to be true about creationism. So we actually know things about evolution. That's the thing. So we go over the facts of evolution where you can fail to list the facts for creationism, for example.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's have another one of these. I think it's, of course, how you phrase the question determines every survey. Did I answer the question that an elephant and a pine tree are different kinds? And he right away changed it to say elephant and mammoth.
I tell you what.
I said elephant and pine tree. He changed it.
And we put down definitions, too, because I mean, this is going to be key. I've given my definition again and again and again, and he keeps saying, well, if it brings forth, which is not a definition
of species.
Kent, what do you think would be a fair way to phrase, just so it doesn't look like there's any bias, what do you think a fair way to phrase the question would be? And I'll put it on right now as we speak.
Well, let me think about that before I just off the cuff. I'll text you one.
I can do it so much easier. I already did the video on this, the phylogeny challenge. And so anybody that wants to can go watch the video, the phylogeny challenge. Did Kent Hovind meet that challenge?
And that should be the simple question, honestly. I mean, the challenge should be, did Kent answer the question or meet the phylogeny challenge? Now, we are familiar with the phylogeny challenge. I've seen the video. I think most people have. I think it's a fair question to ask as is. Did Kent answer the phylogeny challenge?
Well, good question. Let's ask a few more questions. Did Arend demonstrate that a pine tree and a whale or elephant are related? Did Aaron demonstrate that any
classification of eukaryotes? Yes, I did.
See what the listeners think. Did you demonstrate that evolution is actually qualifies as science?
That was
that will have to be the second one because we haven't even addressed that.
Sure. That was not even addressed in this particular topic.
Well, let's do another one. Set it up with Rhonda, 855 Big Dino extension 2. She keeps the schedule, and I think 1.5 to 2 hours is plenty for people to sit and listen to. But sure. I would like to remind you guys, you're going to die one day, and you're going to be dead for a long time. I hope you can help. Can you take what you believe now to the grave? You happy with it?
Yep.
Okay. We'll see you then. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, Kent, for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right.
And
thank you.
We're going to kind of wrap this up. Obviously, it has been a little bit over 2 hours. There is going to be an after show. Bullinators.
Yeah, I got to tell you, this was a bucket of chuckles. I didn't expect to have as much fun with this as I did.
I'm glad. You know what? And I enjoyed it thoroughly as well.
I had a good time too. I'm going to give Aaron the SpongeBob Award. He's got a vivid imagination.
Kent, could you be a favor? Thank Steve and Nick and Rhonda, all of the above for helping out with this. I've been communicating with them all day, and they really
like
did go
know
out
what
their way
think
to
I
make sure that this happened. Okay.
He says I have a vivid imagination. What did I imagine?
I'll add that to the test that apparently we're going to be making on.
Okay.
Very good.
The Twitter page is located in the video description. It is Non Sequitur on Twitter. Yep. So we'll get all that out there. Trust me.
And let me go ahead and make a few announcements before we close. Before we close out the show, just real quick. Number one, thank you guys for listening. Today we hit our 1,000th subscriber. So in the 6 weeks that we've been doing this, that's amazing, and we want to thank you guys for that. Thank you to
you
Aaron,
got 1,000 subscribers in just 6 weeks.
Yeah. Thank you. and thank you to Aaron and Kent for coming out and doing this. We would love to do another one. I think this was a great contentious, entertaining, informative. Discussion, so we will definitely do that again. And thank you to the guys behind the scenes, Frankie from the Geek Room, Holy Kool-Aid yesterday for your time and your effort with us. That means a lot. And to the people on Kent Hovind's side as well, Nick and Rhonda and Steven, for everything that you've done. We appreciate that as well. You can go and on our Facebook page and Twitter, and that's they're both the handle for that is Non Sex Show, and that's NON SEQ show. You can also go to our website to get past episodes that we've done. We will also have links there to ways that you can actually get the podcast. We're on iTunes and Spotify, Spreaker and TuneIn and Google Play, and of course the iTunes store. So however you listen to podcasts, we have a way for you to do it. Let me make sure I covered everything. Tomorrow we will be having a kind of an informal hangout we're going to try to have the flat earth discussion and we actually have a an astronomer who is she's right now in her PhD for astrophysics from Australia. She works at the Sydney Observatory, Kirsten Banks. She will be joining us to kind of refute that and go through that. It's always an entertaining conversation when you're dealing with flat earth. But that's all I have, unless Steve has anything else.
Yeah, a couple things. One, we might be having an interview with Mad Mike Hughes, the guy that's launching himself 1,800 meters in the air on a rocket. I've arranged to have a phone call with him this weekend and get a little interview out with him, and that's going to work in great with the flat earth hangout that we're having this weekend. And again, we are having an after show. It's going to be on the Great Debate Community webpage, YouTube channel. So if you go to Great Debate Community on YouTube, you'll find it. A Bullinator is going to be running that. It will be an open hangout. I already have people that want to join. Chucky, I know you want to join, and a few other people want to join. It's going to be open. But if you haven't gone to that channel yet and subscribed to it, the link is in the video description. So is a link to Hovind's channel. So is a link to Aaron's, my personal channel, and all are the links for the Twitter and everything else. So we appreciate everybody who's gone out of the way to help us out. Thank you so much for getting 1,000 subscribers already on this particular YouTube channel, which has only been out for 6 weeks or so. Amazing. We appreciate all your support. We appreciate all your continual listening and all your feedback. We look forward to reading your comments. And this was absolutely enjoyable. And I'm thrilled to death that we made this happen. And we're thrilled to death that so many of you turned out not only to listen to this, but actually helped make this happen because you guys are great. You guys just did a fantastic job of promoting this. I couldn't have asked for anything better. And to my partner, Kyle, thank you so much for all you've done in making all this happen as well, because you put a lot of work into this, and it is definitely showed.
Thank you.
Okay, now I owe Aaron an apology, if I can take a minute.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay, I mentioned on my YouTube some time ago that I had had a debate with him, and that is incorrect. I was on the Drunken Peasant show, and his name came up, and I do so many of these discussions, I guess I assumed he was in the audience listening, but I did not intentionally lie. I just was mistaken. We have never talked until tonight, and thank you for coming on with me. And if we do a couple more of these, I'm going to get both of you converted. That'll be great.
Okay? Good luck with that. Okay. You know what? I'm down for that challenge. Go ahead. Take your best shot. Let's do it.
I'm going to try.
Okay, fair enough.
Thank you so much, guys. All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Good night, guys.
Have a good night, everyone.
We'll see you in the after show. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers.